We know that it's the continuation of the expression of our meeting that we had to come. But as we always do, really should need that we okay, just as a practice so that because there are other people that were not there the last time that we did. We are holding our meeting at the most difficult time of our country, but things are starting to be a bit changed. Normally we don't wake up with bad news. We woken up today with a program that is at the UN building today, where the Minister of Arts and Culture is there on the program of meeting of blankets and so on, changing the course of the world. And that is the new United States. And we will have to, as we soldier on and ask everybody, ask himself or herself, what is it that a person can do to contribute into ensuring that our country is stable, our image again, back our integrity as the country, but more and above, it's the unity of our country and that of Africa, because it's not about us, it's more about Africa. Other questions we can ask when we are alone or when we are with friends, but safe to say that we must safeguard making comments that are going to pour paraffin into the fire. Having said that, I am Nilewa Dunjwa, as you know, the Chairperson of Portfolio Committee on Health. On my right is the Secretariat, I'm sorry, on my left is Ms. Matalamba, who is the Portfolio Secretary. On my right, I don't know why they are seated like this today. Well, I don't want to ask too many questions. It's Ms. Mbomane, who is our content advisor, and Mr. Zubair, who is our researcher. The extreme left against the wall is Noltando, who is the secretary, study professor of Afghanistan Congress. Mbali, Ms. Mbali, who is our committee assistant. And Ms. Landu, who is our communication officer of the committee. I will then hand over to honorable members to introduce themselves, and after that, it will be your team chair, and then it will be our guest. But house rules are, because these are not new guests, they know no phone calls, phones must be on silent, no taking of photos, no questions are asked. By guests, only honorable members are allowed to ask questions. Thank you very much. Over to you, honorable members.
Thanks very much. Good morning, everybody. My name is Makala.
Thanks, my name is Nonsan Sandu Makala, member of the committee. Good morning, everyone. Morning, Skipper, member of the committee.
Morning, everyone. My name is Mashwani Mashanta, member of the committee.
Morning, everybody. I'm Itumele Mosala.
Good morning. I'm Lundi Sorcha, member of the committee.
morning, sir. I'm Yusuf Zahilawe, and I'm the chairperson of the Council for Medical Schools.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. I'm Dan De Cuso. I'm the CEO of an action register of the Council for Medical Schools.
Good morning. My name is Paul Mazia. I'm the General Manager for Financial Supervision.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Craig Burton-Durham and I'm the General Manager of Legal Services at the Council for Medical Schools.
Good morning. I'm Parash Prema. I'm General Manager of Benefits Management at the Council for Medical Schools.
Good morning.
My name
is Tisha Kande. I represent PMC. I represent PMG here this morning as the monitor. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Tamar Khan from Business Air and the Financial Mail.
We have a couple of apologies. One, Dr. Marisela, we announced the last meeting, we were not there. His mother and he is preparing for the funeral. Dr. Volmik is not well. And we're waking up with the news that Dr. James is also preparing for the funeral of his mother. And Iman Sheikh, Honorable Mr. Iman Sheikh is with the appropriations for now. So those are the apologies that we are having. We will then hand over to you, Chair. I think you were here last time. You were listening to our concerns and hoping that now at least you have heeded the call. And over to you for the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity to, in fact, act upon your comments and concerns, and hopefully we have now sorted out the format and structure the way you would prefer in our presentation. Clearly was a problem relating to the structure of the presentation, and the way I understood it, there weren't any issues arising out of the actual written report. So I've got my team here, and instead of spending too much time in introductory comments, I would like to pass you on to our acting CEO, Mr. Dan Lahutia, to take us further in our presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Indeed, it is correct to confirm what our Chairperson said, that we've listened to your concerns. And we tried to meet the expectations of the portfolio committee. I think last week we could have come across that we're defending ourselves, but it just that we couldn't just understand very clearly. But we've now tried to amend the presentation in terms of your expectations. And we're encouraged by the comments of the chairperson to say it was a positive step on our part, and we hope in our presentation we'll be able to definitely meet the expectations of the portfolio committee and thereafter take questions. Chairperson, just in terms of the structure, we thought that we'll introduce the CMS as an institution and the legislation that governs us, and also deal with the process of the strategic plan and what's contained in the strategic plan. Also highlight the strategic objectives of each and every business unit we have in the council, and most importantly, the budget that supports this strategic objectives, as well as our annual performance plan. Just in terms of our legislation, we are a creature of statutes established in terms of the National Teams Act, Act of 1998, Act number 131. We regulate private healthcare industry, which includes medical aid schemes, administrators, brokers, and managed care entities. All these entities are accredited by us. All these medical schemes in the country are registered by us as a Council for Medical Schemes, including PAMED, your own medical aid scheme. And all the administrators in the country that are doing the business of healthcare are also administered by ourselves. The section that actually gives the mandate of the Council for Medical Schemes is section 7 of the Act, which entirely is concerned with the protection of beneficiaries and also concerned with the well-functioning of the medical aid scheme. And we are also obliged to, we are required to make recommendations to the minister in terms of the measurement of quality of the healthcare services that are provided by this private institution. And most importantly, we investigate and resolve complaints of beneficiaries. And the other important aspect in terms of this mandate is that we advise the minister on any matter concerning medical aid schemes, and we also can perform any other function that the minister can contract us. We're taking interest in the development of healthcare policy in the country. Our former chairperson was taking the Ministerial Advisory Committee and we on the National Health Insurance Committee, and we've been making contributions towards the development of that particular policy. Now, we all know that every legislation and everything that we do must comply with the constitution of the country, and we're taking full cognizance of that in the work that we do, that whatever action we do must be in line with the constitution and also, of course, with the act that we that governs us. We're also taking into consideration the national health care, because we are working in the national in the health space. The National Health Act is a very, very important piece of legislation that we take care of. We know that the vision of this country or of this administration is the National Development Plan. It's called Vision 2030, which I'm sure you all are aware of. We've taken note of that. There's a chapter in that document, chapter 10, that deals with healthcare matters, and that's where we aligning ourselves in terms of the work that we do, that we need to promote the vision that's contained in that particular chapter. And we've also taken into consideration the strategic goals for the 2014-2019 of the National Department of Health, because the National Department of Health is our executive authority, so we need to be taking note of the development around the strategic direction that they're taking, so that we become relevant as well as an institution. Once that has been done, we've developed our own goals, the goals as an institution, as a CMS. The first goal is to promote access to good quality medical scheme cover is maximized. We want to encourage people to belong to medical aid schemes, and that there must be no discrimination if a member, if a particular person wants to belong to a medical aid scheme. And there are pillars that support this particular goal, and it will be enunciated in the other presentation. The other goal is that medical schemes must be properly governed and are responsive to the environment, and beneficiaries are informed and protected at all times. You would hear sometimes that we were investigating a particular scheme, we put a particular scheme under curatorship,
with promoter strategies is because we are pursuing this objective of having medical schemes properly governed in this country. Goal number three is to ask for our internal strengths and weaknesses. CMS, because we are regulating this massive industry, we must have the proper infrastructure in place. We must have the proper human resource personnel in place. And most importantly, we must have the necessary financial resources. So that is natural to put into our own internal working. The fourth goal is the one that provides influential strategic advice to the minister. And in this regard, we are providing input into the NHI development. This is all what's known to all of us, that is the big national health policy development in this country, and we're taking keen interest in the development of this. This is just to show the goals that I've just indicated. Access to medical aid in medical schemes are properly governed, and ourselves as a regulator. And the fourth one, as I've just indicated, is to interact with policy development as they're developed by the Department of Health. Now, we have identified the following as our strategic focus for this next 5 years. We wish to strengthen our regulatory mandate and by way of amendment to the Medical Schemes Act, and we also want to measure the quality and outcomes of healthcare in the medical aid scheme. This is also an imperative in terms of that section 7. We need to measure quality of healthcare in the environment that we are regulating. We also want to assess the value of well-aid of managed care entities in the medical schemes environment. We want to develop a beneficial register to facilitate the collection of data. And we also want to develop an alternative benefit framework. We want the people, the public out there, to know what the CMS is all about. We are always told that people do not know what the Council for Medical Schemes is, so we want to promote this brand as an institution. And our IT infrastructure also is becoming old, and we want to reinvigorate this so that we meet the development of regulation in our own environment. And most importantly, our employees are our important assets, and we want to remain an employer of choice in that region. So we have got projects that look into making this a reality. And we're also looking at how we can sustain our funding, the funding of operations as CMS. Because we indeed have got a limited budget. We'll be coming to that later in the presentation. We have about 12 business units in the council. The first one being that of the Office of the Registrar. The Office of the Registrar has got about 10 to 12 people to contribute, the various general managers that we have here. So it's quite a heavy structure in terms of reporting that. The next sub-program under the CEO is the CFO's office, which is headed by the Chief Financial Officer. In this case, it is myself, and under that, we've got about four managers and officers that deal with the financial management. This is the unit that deals with the internal finances of the council. It's the one that deals with the KFMA, the supply chain management, all the tenders and procurement processes in the council as an internal financial management structure.
information and communication technology, our IT and IT systems, is headed by our chief information officer in the name of Jeff Tuchel, and he's got various managers and subdivisions. We've got a software development side and a network development side, as well as a knowledge management side, which is normally your resource center, and it's got various people underneath them. Human resources, as we've indicated, our people are important assets. We've got a general manager, and in that unit as well, we've got a manager reporting to the general manager and some officers under that the manager. The strategy office, the position is vacant. We had a strategist resigning last year, and we're still in the process of recruiting for that. But it's an important position because we need a strategic advice from time to time. This strategic office is also has for some sub programs of complaint adjudication as well as clinical unit, which is headed by senior managers in that regard. That is the clinical unit that reports to the strategist. It's headed by a doctor called Dr. Mamatawa Kao, and it's got some clinical clinicians under her and health economists as well. The accreditation, this is the unit that deals with the accreditation of our administrators, accreditation of managed care entities, as well as our brokers. It's headed by a general manager called Stanley Kolba. And in that regard as well, it has got a division of brokers headed by a manager, and also a division of administrators and managed care entities headed by also a manager in that regard. And it's got analysts that deal with all accreditation methods under them. Research and monitoring also is a unit that do some research so that they can advise on developments in the industry as well as policy measures. It's also headed by a general manager, and underneath them we've got health economics and some researchers and senior researchers under them there. Stakeholder relations, this is the unit that deals with our brands and communication methods, and it also deals with various stakeholders in terms of communicating the work we do and also our own successes and the difficulties that we might have as an institution. It's also headed by a general manager, and it's divided also into three sub-units. We've got the education and training. This is the unit that goes out there and promote and do and popularize our brand and tell people out there what exactly we are doing as a country. They go out to a number of places to tell the public, the general public, about the work we do. The customer care center is normally called the call center, where every member of public can call in and be assisted in terms of the concerns that they might be having in respect of the medical system they belong to. And the last wing there is the communications unit that deals with our internal communications and the channels that we publish as an institution. Compliance and investigation is headed by a general manager. This is the unit that deals with your normal routine inspections and also other inspections that we may receive information that we can go onto the scheme, look into the evidence that we may find in that scheme, and after we've done the investigation, appropriate level of action is taken once we've got evidence to the allegations that may have reached us. And underneath him, we've got some senior investigator compliance officers. Benefit management is headed by a general manager, Paresh Prema, we're working here. This is the unit that actually looks into the rules of scheme, the basic constitution of each and every scheme. They deal with the rules of the scheme, each and every year with a number of amendments that come through, especially when it is in the beginning of the year when the benefit options are changing. So they're quite busy during December when actually we are on holiday and they remain in the office too, so that they can prepare for January because the financial year of scheme ends in December. Sorry. Legal services is headed by our general manager, Mr. Craig Bettendarum, where we're in here. This is the unit that deals with legal advice for both the council and the office of the registrar. You must have been reading that we go to court to defend our decisions as the council for medical schemes. Medical schemes do take us to court because they are normally do not agree with the decisions that the council and the office of the registrar do take. So this unit, it looks very small, but it's a very, very big unit in terms of the work that they do, because we reach to the level of the Supreme Court and Constitutional Court. Financial supervision is headed by General Manager Maria next to me. This unit deals with the financial monitoring of schemes. As indicated earlier on, that the CFO's office is dealing with the internal finances of council. In this regard, so that we don't cause confusion, the financial supervision deals with the finances of the medical aid scheme. They monitor the financial health of the medical aid scheme. It's headed by Tebo Komazia, with whom we're with here now. And under her, there's a chief financial analyst and some senior financial analysts under her. They are mainly accountants. So we've been talking that we bring a number of various professions, but here this division is mainly meant by accountants because the financial schemes are much complicated and they require certain level of expertise and competence. Complaints adjudication, we indicated, is a sub-program under the strategy office. It deals mainly with the complaints from members of and beneficiaries of medical aid scheme. It's headed by a senior manager, and underneath there are various legal officers who have got a legal understanding of the medical scheme. I think I've given the background in terms of
the whole narrative of the strategic plan. It's better that she does her own story so that she follows through. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to give you a very high level synopsis of the strategic plan, as well as the situational analysis to give you a sense of some of the issues that we continue to grapple with. Just in terms of process, the strategic plan 2015-2020, which is before you, was developed obviously taking into account various policy imperatives, as well as the National Department of Health's own strategic goals and vision. And then the management team at the CMS had a session to identify what the strategic focus areas ought to be, which was then followed by a session with council between management of the CMS and the council, which is essentially the board of the council for medical schemes, to basically flesh out these issues further. And that process culminated into the document that is before you, which was then submitted to our executive authority, and the final draft was submitted in January of this year. And I need to indicate at this point that our strategic plan is in fact based on the National Treasury template, and our performance information is also audited. Just in terms of where we are, in terms of looking at the landscape and what some of the challenges are, I think it's important to start off by saying that
I think we are all very aware that the environment that we operate in is one that is really complex. There has been a lot of progress and successes, but there are areas that still require lots of challenges, I mean, lots of attention. There are still some structural problems of the environment, and many a times it's because there are many different role players in the healthcare environment which have interests and incentives that are not necessarily convergent, and that in its own creates its own problems. As a regulator, we continue to have a very strong focus on the protection of members. So every single activity that we do is focused around, you know, ensuring that member interest is protected. However, there are challenges that we experience, and one of the biggest challenges currently that we have is to the PMB regulations. The PMB is the prescribed minimum benefits. It's the guaranteed set of benefits that every member of a medical scheme has access to. There is a fairly new case where there is a medical scheme that is challenging this specific regulation that protects this provision of the Act, and we are engaging with that. It's a very important cornerstone of the Medical Schemes Act in our view. Then there is open enrollment, which requires that open medical schemes should allow any member wishing to join them to join that medical scheme. Again, this is an area that continues to be challenged by participants in the environment, where some medical schemes are seeking to narrow their eligibility provision, which would then have the effect of leaving out certain groups of members or potential members. And again, it's an area where we are engaging with, because also restriction of medical schemes is only allowed by virtue of employment or profession and no other criteria. From a healthcare cost perspective, one of the challenges that we are facing is the absence of a framework that will allow for a centralized determination of prices. And what that means is that increasingly the member will ultimately carry the burden of cost simply because of the manner in which prices are determined in the environment. For example, the tariffs that are being charged by providers and those kinds of things, the type of costs that are coming through on private hospitals. So in the absence of such a framework, that burden will continue to pass on to a member. So every year as your contribution increases, one would see some of those costs coming through there. On the income side, there is some relief. You know what the staff has introduced, a tax credit system. However, in our view, affordability of medical schemes in general continues to be a challenge that will hinder the level of growth that one can see in medical schemes. So it will continue to be the greatest obstacle for growth in the industry. And without some critical policy interventions, many of these challenges will not be resolved. Another area that is proving to be challenging is the governance of medical schemes. I'm sure many of you have read about, you know, several schemes being under curatorship, some boards of trustees being removed. Again, it's largely due to the at times less than arm's length relationships that exist in the environment. There are provisions currently in the Medical Schemes Act that seek to deal with these challenges. However, there is a set of provisions in the amendment bill that seeks to strengthen these provisions. And then, as the acting registrar alluded, managed care is an area that, as an office, we continue to focus on. The simple way of thinking of managed care is that you want to stop the member from ending up in hospital. And what that would do is that it would reduce your costs downstream. So done properly, this would actually contribute largely to managing these sort of financial costs that one is seeing in the healthcare environment. There's other areas that are alluded to in the document itself that we are working on. The low-cost benefit framework, again, is to deal with affordability issues, access. We are also participating in the much-publicized healthcare inquiry that is led by the Competition Commission. And we are also engaging with National Treasury on issues of demarcation, what is a medical scheme and what is a healthcare insurance policy. The next portion of my presentation just gives a synopsis of what has happened to the performance of medical schemes today. And before I begin, I thought I should just clarify again that the financial year of medical schemes runs from the 1st of January up until the 31st of December. And those medical schemes, for example, for 2014, for the year ended December 2014, medical schemes are only going to submit their audited financials in April 2015, this month that is ending now. So that shouldn't be confused with the financial year of the CMS as an entity, which runs from the 1st of April until the 31st of March, like all Schedule 3A entities. So that distinction there is very important. So the graph that I'm going to show you now relates to the performance of the medical schemes over which CMS has oversight. The internal finance unit that Ben alluded to is the one that's inward looking. This work relates to the performance of the entities that we have oversight. So there is always a year's lag between our reporting cycle and that of medical schemes, which is why in 2015, you are only looking at 2014 data. 2014 data is only coming in at the end of April, which is why the slides that you see in here are up until 2013. That's the last audited data that we have. Just some statistics to give you a sense of the size of the industry that we are regulating. In 2013, contributions were about 130 billion, claims paid out were about 113, and then reserves, net assets, were 43 billion rand. So it's a fairly large industry. This slide just gives a sense of what has happened to schemes over time. One can clearly see the number of schemes coming down, and that's because of the mergers that we've seen in the environment. There's been a lot of consolidation, largely due to market forces. The issue there really is that, you know, we ought to be making that the industry, making sure that the industry remains competitive and is not dominated by a few players, because that would then come with problems of its own. The purple line just shows you the growth in the number of total lives covered, and from about 2006, it's largely the impact of GEM. If one removes that, that line would be fairly flat, which is why initiatives such as the low-cost benefit option framework are important, because those speak to increasing coverage and access. This slide just shows the trends in average age of beneficiaries in the industry. Open schemes are currently sitting at about 33.3, that is restricted schemes. Now, the significance of this graph is that as schemes age, it obviously places a burden on medical schemes from a cost perspective, because what then happens is that typically the population that you have is older and sicker, and are more prone to your more expensive diseases, and that comes through in the type of contributions that are being put through in schemes. And as contributions continue to increase higher than inflation, one would then see your younger and healthier members leaving the environment, and therefore the scheme would lose out on the sort of cross subsidies that are required to keep the scheme sustainable. So the importance of this actually is the type of burden that it's placing on schemes. And without a framework such that would allow for the a risk adjustment framework, you know, this sort of thing would continue to be pervasive and therefore continue to impact on affordability of these sort of schemes. So essentially one requires a system that would equalize the risk across all Medicare schemes. This is just to give you a sense of how the health rent was distributed. In 2013, 86 cents of every health rent went towards healthcare benefits, and 12 rent went to non-healthcare expenditure, which is comprised of things like administration fees, PO fees, trustee fees, and all of the other delivery type costs that a medical scheme incurs. This slide shows the trend in spend on healthcare expenditure. The orange line is private hospitals, medical specialists, and medicines. The three together account for about over 35% of the total spend. And one can see that overall, over the last 10 years or so, there's been a sustained increase in the in healthcare expenditure. Again, the significance of this is the impact that it has on affordability of medical schemes. This is just the same graph, just shown by her life covered per beneficiary per annum. Once again, one sees the sort of costs that are coming through from medical specialists, private hospitals, and medicine. So that's the average amount of money that a beneficiary would pay per annum for the different disciplines. This slide shows non-healthcare expenditure over time. It has been adjusted for inflation. This one can look, in fact, as a success area, because over time it has come down in real terms. The office engages very vigorously, you know, in this area, and we've had successes, but it does not say that there aren't schemes that continue to have challenges in respect of non-healthcare expenditure. Once more, this is an area where amendment is required, because in terms of the current Medicare Schemes Act, it is very limited in terms of what the council and the registrar can do to prevent schemes from spending inordinate amounts of money on these type of interventions, particularly where one cannot then make the correlation with value. You know, there needs to be value for every intervention that a medical scheme undertakes. Lastly, this slide just gives a sense of what the statutory requirement is in terms of solvency. The blue area is where schemes ought to be in terms of statutory requirements. So all medical schemes are required to have 25% of their annual contributions in reserves. And how that assists is that if in a particular month the claim that a medical scheme has to pay exceeds the contribution received, that's where reserves would come in to sort of assist with the payment of claims, which is why schemes are required to hold a certain amount of reserves. Overall, both restricted and open medical schemes continue to be above the required statutory solvency. There's only about seven of the 83 odd schemes that are below the statutory requirement, and those are being engaged with on an ongoing basis. So this just gives you a sense overall of where the environment is and what some of the key challenges that we continue to face are, and what the sort of policy interventions and most importantly the amendment to the Medical Scheme Act, you know, that are required to strengthen some of the areas that I've alluded to in my presentation. Then we'll take us through the strategic objectives.
We've given an overall strategic approach to our operations. We've given what we want to do in the next 5 years. We've also given you statistics in terms of the industry we are engaging, because this is very, very important, because we are engaging medical teams. It's important that you understand the status of the medical teams. The strategic objectives now will deal with our operational year, which is the 2015-16. This is what we need to achieve in the financial year. We'll take it per program, the first program being that of the CEO and the registrar. Well, the CEO is the accounting officer in terms of the Medical Practice Act, and his overall mandate is to make sure that he provides leadership in the organization, strategic leadership of the organization, and ensure that the industry is well regulated. That is the leadership that is required for the purposes of sustainability of the organization and that of the industry. The second program or the second business unit is the CFO's office, which I've already alluded to, charged with the maintenance of efficient and effective financial systems. And it has got some strategic objectives of financial management. In terms of the PFMA, it has got another objective of risk management. Risk management in organizations is becoming very, very popular and is being audited very rigorously. And this unit is also responsible for planning and budgeting for the entity. The next program, which is our ICT and knowledge management, the purpose of this unit is to provide enabling technology so that we meet the requirements of our regulation. And it has got some strategic objectives of operations and infrastructure, software development and maintenance, and knowledge management, knowledge and records management. We're just highlighting these strategic objectives, the indicators related to these strategic objectives and the interval according to which these indicators are measured are contained in the document itself. So as we will take in questions, we can refer to various indicators of each and every different unit. Human resource management, the purpose that is stated is to have the purpose of this subscribe is to have high quality service to internal and external customers and in terms of assessing their needs and continuously improving human resource programs that promote the support of the country's patients. It has got about two strategic objectives for this financial recruitment and talent management, and that this human resource that you have must always perform at maximum level or at the required level. The strategic office, which indicated, is the one that advises all strategic methods in the organization and also advises the Ministry of Health in terms of the health reforms and health policies that may be developing in a particular year. So this is the unit that must provide that particular advice. It deals with issues like prescribed minimum benefits, which we have said that are the pillars of this act. We've got about 170 PMD conditions, and those must be monitored on an ongoing basis.
and we also provide clinical opinions as well, because there are methods, complaints methods that are out of a clinical meeting that needs a particular level of interaction to resolve them. The accreditation unit, we've indicated that this is the unit that accredits brokers and managed care entities, and as it states, the strategic objective, they must accredit, they must ensure that the brokers are fit and proper. Managed care entities also are evaluated in terms of the accreditation standards, and the administrators and self-administered schemes also are evaluated in terms of the agreed accreditation standards. Just in terms of the brokers also were co-regulating this with the FSC, so they must also be regulated with the financial services board. Research and monitoring, with indicated that we are involved in research for purposes of informing policy in the organization. One of their strategic objectives is to monitor the compliance with regulation and with regard to ensuring that the CSN number, practice good number system of treatment provided on the payment statement of medical assistance and service surrenders to members. Stakeholder relations, which indicated the purpose then, that is to communicate and educate the beneficiaries of him. Third strategic objective, stakeholder awareness and training, communication engagement with stakeholders and stakeholder management, which is to promote the very existence of Center for Medical Team and Communication. Compliance and investigation, the purpose is stated there, to take appropriate action to enforce compliance with the Medical Team Act. And in order to achieve that, the enforcement action is to, they do enforcement action by way of investigation, also strengthen and monitor governance in team. We do attend AGMs of medical aid. That's part of monitoring the strengthening the governance in team as such. Benefit management, we've indicated the sole purpose is to analyze the team roles, which we say is the constitution of the team, to ensure that it's compliant with the medical team and other elements like the constitution, as we have indicated. Legal services, we've indicated that they provide legal advisory services for effective regulation of the industry and management of the offices. It also supports the mandate by defending the decisions of counsel and that of the rest. We've indicated that since we not normally agree with our decisions, they take us to court, and that is the responsibility of legal unit to ensure that our decisions are sound and defended. Financial supervision unit, we indicated that it is the unit that monitors the financial health of the industry, and its main strategic objective is to monitor for my financial soundness in the medical system environment. That is why we're able to give this comprehensive statistics that my colleagues have given, because we are closely monitoring their performance in terms of financing. Complaints and adjudication unit, as the name suggests, it must resolve complaints that are received from members and beneficiaries. That is their sole mandate. Complaints, we receive about 6,000 complaints each year of various kinds. So they are very, very busy this unit. So each year we're looking into a quite number of complaints, ranging from unpaid claims, PME conditions, clinical, all those type of complaints. So in a particular financial year, we find that we receive about 7,000 complaints, whatever the case might be. Just in terms of the budget, I think we have spent time even last week on this budget. I'm not going to reiterate most of the things, but our assumption in developing this budget, we have used the inflationary increase of 5.6% in terms of operational expenditure. The salaries, we've applied the 6.6% increase, which will come into effect in April. But in terms of the budget process, our budget must be submitted to our executive authority, the Minister of Health, but at the same time, there must be concurrence with the Minister of Finance. So as we are speaking now, we have not yet gotten approval of this budget so that we are able to implement it from the 1st of October. If the concurrent requires to make a downward adjustment in terms of the percentage that we have assumed here, we have to do so because we cannot implement this budget until such time that we have gotten concurrence from both ministers. One of the assumptions that is used is that we must build capacity for demarcation regulations. My colleague has alluded to that. The demarcation regulations have been promulgated by National Treasury, and once they come into effect, they will have an impact on our operations because there are some products that we think are in actual effect during the business of the demarcation. And in that regard, because we are building capacity, we will also require additional office space, which we have. We are not utilizing it, we have not taken it over because the building that we are renting, which we moved in the financial presentation, but we have not taken the entire building because we have not grown to that full capacity. But if we're going to require additional office space, it's not going to be a change much because we've got some office space that we can utilize in that regard. And as a result, we've assumed that we will take in this new SAM position so that we're able to meet the requirements of our operation as well as the challenges that may be brought about by the demarcation regulation. Okay, now we have sought to demonstrate that we, from 2012, those are the audited outcomes. I think that was a concern. Now, 2014, 15, also that is in relation to the outcome that we just been audited. We're going to get the result of this audit later this year. That is the financial year that has just ended. But our projection now is in the column of 15, 16. That is the financial year that we're talking about now. We have proposed a budget of about 131 million, and we have seen that we are regulating an industry of about 130 billion. So our budget is compared to what the industry is collecting, very, very minute. So, and therefore, the 16, 17, and 17, 18 is the medium-term expenditure estimate as required by National Treasury. Those are our medium-term expenditure framework estimates. But our major thrust is this column of 2015-16, which will fund this operational year on which we are presenting the strategic objectives. Our levy is based on the number of principal members in the medical clinic environment. In terms of column M, for mother, we've got about 3.8 million beneficiaries. So we are using our budget and the particular income that we may have, and ultimately divide the appropriate income by the total number of memberships that we have in there. So for each member this year, we're proposing that we'll collect 31.44 cents. Principal member, which is a levy increase of about 13.11% compared to last year's levy. And we've indicated why this big jump, because we're trying to accommodate the demarcation process, and we're also going to be taking additional office space if we get approval to do so. And just to show that the levy that we've been collecting over the years from 2010, starting from 15.42 cents, and this year we're proposing just less than 35 cents, 31.44 cents. We've indicated that our major capital, our major expenditure is the salary, because we are a service entity. Our major spending in terms of expenditure is in terms of salary. Capital expenditure accounts for about 4.8%. And the other administrative expenses, the rental, and all those things account for about 34.5%. This is just to show the number of employees that we employ in terms of this budget that will be about 115 in the financial year 2016. And expenditure per unit, just in terms of that, as you can see, the 141 that we're proposing, that is the total per unit in terms of the units that we have in the council. I think we just also just providing this table just to show the kind of measurement interval that we use to measure particular indicators. In the CEO's office, there's a quarterly measurement where we provide some strategic advice and support to the development of strategic policies. So this must be measured on a quarterly basis. And in terms of the budget can only be produced once. So the measurement there is only on an annual basis. Annual financial statements, for example, are produced only once, so a measure will be on an annual basis. But the other inputs that go in there, on a monthly basis, we produce our monthly management accounts and all these things. So they feed into the annual product there. The risk register is measured on a quarterly basis. That's in terms of ICT, they've got an annual measurement of their indicators. HR, those that are measured annually, those that are measured on a quarterly basis. Also, in respect of the strategy office, there are indicators that are measured on an annual basis. Accreditation, also in terms of our measurement of these indicators, others are measured on a quarterly. Broker applications, managed fares, it could be after almost every. So we just need to assess on a quarterly basis how many brokers have we accredited, how many managed care entities have we accredited. Research and monitoring, they do an annual report, they make a very important contribution to an annual report, and in that regard, as the name suggests, it will be measured on an annual basis. They've also got other quarterly measurement indicators, which refers to stakeholder training and media monitoring. Compliance and investigation, also because they're continuously investigating the routine inspections and other inspections, they can be measured on a quarterly basis, but also on an annual basis. But an investigation in this industry can take almost a year to conclude. Benefit management, medical teams, even when they submit medical teams role amendment at the end of it, they also do that during the year, because in the year, during the year, they can also be looking into a particular role and they wish to amend. So we always receive role amendments right through the year. So on a quarterly basis, we can be able to take a measure of what we do in terms of role amendments and role presentation. The legal fees, legal opinions, court cases, court appearances, they can also be measured on a quarterly basis because we are active right through the year. So we can be able to take a quarterly measure and an annual measure of this particular indicator. Financial supervision units on a quarterly basis, close monitoring of financial performance of schemes, that is mandated in terms of regulation. 29. That they do close monitoring on a quarterly basis. And because they do analyze the financials of scheme on an annual basis, and that culminates in our annual report, they also got an annual measure of their performance. Complaints and adjudication, as indicated prior, that we receive about 6,000 complaints a year, but they are received almost on a daily basis. So the important measure there is also to look into them on a quarterly basis. But on a monthly basis as well, the senior managers refer to report on the resolution of the rate of resolution in that particular. Because this is a very important aspect. If you do not resolve complaints of members, this industry members will be disgruntled and dissatisfied with the kind of services that they are receiving from medical treatment. So it's a very, very important measure. We monitor it very closely on a quarterly basis, on a monthly basis, and on an annual basis as well. Chairperson, thank you very much. We pledge to be elaborated for the reason for this year. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Honourable members, that is the presentation. Any questions? Let's have Honourable Musala. For now.
No, thanks, Chair. Page 80. Section C of the APP under the foreword by the chairperson of the council. The chairperson says that, and I quote, the 2010 High Court judgment, which set aside the reference price list regulations, has left a void in the regulation of the healthcare prices and leaves many medical scheme beneficiaries unprotected. The first question in relation to that aspect, does this then suggest that each medical aid scheme is regulating itself from a price point of view? Each medical aid scheme. And is this, does this create a window of opportunity for exploitation of beneficiaries? The second question is, what implication does this have in the movement towards the implementation of the National Health Insurance in the Republic of South Africa if it's not addressed urgently? The second one is on page 107. Page 105 there, which says, there's a paragraph which says resignations at strategic levels over the last 5 years has begun to taper off in 2010-2011. However, in recent years, SMS has begun to experience team turnover in key areas. Simple question, what has been your turnaround strategy to address this particular situation? You have a plan in place, you have a strategy to deal with this situation. The next one is on page 107, if you allow me, Chair. The last two paragraphs there at the bottom. The clinical unique organogram has position field, blah, 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 blah. And the last one. Can you just explain this? I mean, it doesn't make sense. Can you elaborate a little bit on what is it that you are saying here? Because you are saying the unit is currently running at full capacity. This capacity, however, has not been adequate to meet targets and expectations over a number of financial sectors. Would you be kind enough to explain that? The second, another one is on page 113. I see here you are intending to engage external consultants. Now, I think we are beginning to have some allergies with regards to consultants. Not to say that we don't want consultants to be used, but in a country where we are having high rate of unemployment and lots of unemployed graduates, why would you want to continue to use consultants and not tap on the unemployed graduates? Is there a problem with them? Can you use one or two of those consultants to train these unemployed graduates in this particular field? But I see you
you say that the unit will engage external consultants to support implementation of key objectives. You know, the money that you are that will be paying consultants, of course, will be very exorbitant. So the recharging you can have is the money that I think you can use to pay unemployed graduates. The next one is on page 116, Chair. You see here, just the last sentence, after I read the whole thing, the last sentence is, therefore, a resource to manage the content of the website, apparently you've got a little bit of stress with regard to your information in terms of the additional demand that is being placed on your website. You've got a lot of demands there. But you then say, therefore, a resource to manage the content of the website, social media sites, and helicopter queries are urgently required. And the question is, required from whom? By whom? Because if you don't elaborate, you say, this is our plan, and so on and so forth, it leaves us in the limbo. You know, the last question from me, Chair, would be on page 118. And it will still be that same question. Why are you not engaging? Because you've got a serious challenge. Why are you not engaging unemployed graduates to help us fight unemployment in South Africa, but rather consider, you know, outside expertise and so on and so forth? Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair. I think my first read on page 11, which is specific for criteria for the next 5 years. My question, you know, that the specific for criteria for 5 years, let's call it a form, are very promising. But looking at the one of them, I see that from 2014, November, the senior strategy is not vacant. So how are you going to try this very, very promising focus area? How are you going to find out the person who's supposed to be driving it? That is the first one. The second one is also again looking at the one of them. I just want to find out how far is the foreign data report to the Guatemalan show. How far is that and when is the review to be published? That's interesting. And that is one of the biggest frustrations on members of medical aid is funds that will be funded from January by June, the end of the month. And those are the work areas that we really need those funds to use everything. Is there a way of making sure that the members, as you oversight on the stakeholders, do they do awareness on people to understand how to manage their funds? Because I don't understand how by June they're gone. When you really need them, how does that happen? And at times they haven't really been with hospitals January to March, really there's no one is very much sick. But I can tell you by May, June is gone. How does that happen? Lesser funds to the members, or maybe more funds to officials or to the structure. I don't know. How does that happen?
On my side, there was your things on the question. There is something very strange which I want to understand. on page 44 of the slide. Which you said, page 44, servant. You said, at times, there is, I'll use it my that's it. There is more money that I utilize as a member than the contributions that I have made. Can you make it clear for me to understand? Because my understanding is that a member contributes every month, and therefore they can't be paid. The other one, which I find it safe, I want to put across to you that I don't think your community, if you do communicate, let me rephrase, if you do communicate, which section of the community do you communicate to? Or you leave communication, the greater part of communication, to the skills themselves? And how confident are you that they do that? I will tell you why. If a member, as a public representative, I go to a doctor, say, let me just be straight. I went for dental implant. I was taken aback when I was told that by the surgeon, the physician was most of it, that I am to pay 6,000. I couldn't understand. I'm the most expensive medical agency, but I am still to pay 6,000. And what was explained made me to be more confused. In fact, I was told that I should ask my medical agency, my skin that I. Why is that thing happening? So that is why, for me, the issue of communication, a person who is not at my level, which at my level I am expected to have known about all this, I am ignorant. What's more about the health work and ordinary myself, why is so the issue of communication, whom do you communicate, and if you do communicate to whom? So that I'm asking that question, I'm trying to motivate why I'm asking that question, is that people are to understand. Because when people don't know, exactly what Honorable Masala asked, among others, that when people are not aware, they are going to be vulnerable and not understand and buy in to this greater, this most important and profound program that the National Health Insurance is. If people are ignorant, they are going to be vulnerable. I'm going to come, I'm going to take them, I'm going to take them the other way. Whereas, if the entire community was aware, I do think that. So my worry is, and if you communicate, which language do you use? Which language do you use? The need, the type of media you use for that voice. Remember, for 11 official languages in the country. And therefore, for me, communication, because if communication is not correct, we are going to be a big case. You say I see in your structure, you've got a very huge structure that uses complaints. I would have appreciated if in breaking down, I've used it in the book, but how many, the success rate of you attending to your complaints? The success rate.
they differ. And who are the people that are more complaining? Who are the people who are more complaining? And on what the last question is, and pardon my ignorance, in the, you talked about non-health, what's that? Non-health expenditure. Can I accept that? If it's in the book, you will just refer me to that. Non-health expenditure. I'm going to ask a question that at times we were exposed to that. Whether you do monitor that. Some of, as ordinary people, I take my medicine, I go and buy cosmetics. That happened at some point. I don't know whether you're still there. Is that still happening? In the, our childbearing age, we used to take our medical aid, go and buy formula, go and buy this. That used to happen. Have you in your monitoring and the monitoring of the conduct of medical aid scheme beneficiaries and main members, who monitors that? I'm raising that within the context that we can abuse, as much as we are abused, but we can abuse the schemes that we are contributing to. Who monitors that?
Thanks, welcome. Well, I'll start by raising the matter that you raised in the strategic plan around the issue of affordability, which remains the key problem. And as a result of that, the accessibility is a problem, and therefore the broader objective of universal health coverage therefore remains the same. And you are saying in the practice plan, it's one of the issues that you want to focus on, making sure that there is a inclusive private health care framework that caters for the vulnerable. But as you were doing the presentation, I could not locate that in the presentation. How do you want to achieve it? In this 9-10 programs, we look into the strategic objective of each one of them. I could not relate to any of them. In the annual performance plan, in the context of the MCF, I find it difficult to look at how are you doing to achieve that? So the plan that you just presented. The second issue is the whole question of the current legislation. That somewhere in the strategy. But I could not find, and I can't find in the image here. Because there's no way when you are reflecting about the strategic objectives where you want to amend the current. It's not reflected anywhere in your image. It's in the MTA. How do you tell that you're doing that? Because there's no way where you're talking. But you are reflecting on this plan, but there are things that you are able to do properly, like the complaints process, the appeals, and all those matters, because you are constrained
actual results towards the amendment of this specification. It becomes very clear. The transformation of the industry, right? How do you intend to work? I'm worried about this industry. But in the plan that you're presenting, I don't see how you're transforming it. You can just reflect within that for the 10 projects. Which of the strategic objectives is intended to transform the industry in what way? Because you put a broad statement about transformation as a good statement. But that must then be supported in the plan, in the HP, to say, these are the steps that we're going to be taking to transform the industry. The somewhere we are talking about the role that you're supposed to play within this, the implementation or the realization of the national heritage policy. But I don't know, not yet, you even in the presentation talking about the national heritage. Because the APP doesn't say anything. But in the strategic plan, the 5 year, you're saying something about it, and the role that you're supposed to play. But in the APP, the strategic objectives for the MTS process, there's no such indication. Even in terms of the baseline, it's not a current question. So I'm not sure exactly whether these are just political statements that you're putting and you just put there. It's not related to what you are doing. Because it concerns me that I would have thought that I would then what you are doing. You're facing in the strategic plan must therefore be seen to be a process of implementing through an annual performance plan. But there are many good things that you said in the strategic plan, but I can't see how you're going to realize those things. And therefore, for me, it becomes the disjuncture of the two. Because the APP is not an isolated annual performance plan. It's a plan that is intended to achieve the strategic plan. But if the strategic, the APP, when you go to your strategic implementation, what are the things that you are going to be doing on a quarterly basis, on an annual basis, doesn't reflect the things that you have reflected on the strategic plan. Therefore, the two becomes difficult to be compatible. Because the other one has got its own things, the other one has its own things. They're not talking to each other in terms of what you want to achieve in the strategic plan. For me, that's if you can just clarify that error, because for me it's a very great error. I've been trying to juggle between the two. And when I try to juggle between the two, basing on what are your strategic objectives, on your quarterly performance indicators, I can't relate you achieving what you have written in the 5 year strategy based on this. But this is an MTF. These strategies, these performance indicators, you're not going to change them. You can only improve them. But as you put them, you must ask to check how far are you implementing your 5 year strategy. And therefore, it must relate to each other. That's one, two. The other thing, just to go back to what Honorable Sala raised around the issue of consultants and the preference. Well, when you look at your summary of the budget on the overview, it creates an impression, very good impression, we are reducing this financial year usage of consultants by 50% from 8.4 million or 854,000, I'm not sure what, 8.4 million to 4.2 million. But when you go to each program, now go to program, it's only one program that is reducing substantially. And the question is, if there is an increase on consultant usage for the court employees, you know there's an outcry in the country about municipalities having employed people but used to be consulting consultants simultaneously in the same job. Same problem with court employees that are employed, but there's an increase on the of content. If you don't go to program for free, you look at the summary and say, no, they are doing well. But in essence, no, you're not doing well. There's an increase of usage of content and program for almost most of the programs, except few, two or three that doesn't use them. And just want to understand why that approach? Why can't you take a different approach around this issue of consultants, especially in the context of what the honorable Sada is doing? If you look at program 5, stakeholder relations, it's only one strategic objective in essence, because the other one are normal things. The publications of the annual report, the normal thing. So in essence, there's only one strategic objective, it's training and awareness. That's why they exist on training and awareness. That's the reason for the existence of that program. And it's a program, a full program, with only one purpose for each other. Does it make sense? And then in the CF, in the on page 107, you are saying you are on an annual basis you are going to be submitting the National Health Insurance Report. Can you share to us what it says? What you will be submitting to the minister the National Health Insurance Report. You can just clarify, but you are saying that per quarter, but you are saying annual. I don't know. The target you think is not annual, but the issue you said now you're going to submit in the quarter. But then you put the reporting material to the annual, but you will be submitting the quarter. Just a clarity. I do not understand what that means. Just clarifying. There's some indicator that I want to differentiate between sharing more or less the same. underperformation in trust. Your 1.2.31 and 1.33, what's the difference? 1.231 and 1.233. How does it differ? And then on page 124, just a clarity as well, my understanding, 9.21, number of quarterly financial return reports published. Excluding quarter four. But what is when you go to the quarter target, first quarter not is end. There was a dash. Quarter four there is something. Just clarify that. Because it has confused me, number of quarterly financial returns published excluding quarter four. Not sure whether it means in quarter one we expected to establish quarter four and therefore we're not going to establish in quarter four, or clarify that, and why are you not going to be publishing that quarter four? What is the reason behind that? Why it should not be published? Yeah, I'll stop there for now.
We are going to be brief, but a couple of questions. Just want to add more before we pray for tea, so that you rearrange yourself. Make me to understand, because one of the areas that I always find difficult. Why do you have health economists in the what then becomes their role? Because I would have thought that health economy should be in the Department of Health. Now, what are they doing there? Make me to understand what you've got. Drinker Unit Subprogram 2, you've got the health economist there, you've also got a health economist in the research and monitoring. Well, in that, where there's research, I understand. But basically, in the entity of your nation, why do you have health economy? But I've got my other understanding of the okay. You spoke about demarcation somewhere. Can you just elaborate exactly unpack what I'm sorry that I'm missing that slide now. No. We will be just briefing for tea, so that you rearrange yourself on who is then going to answer where and what. Let me again raise my frustration. It is the nature. I've come to tell that it is a nature. It's an entity that you difficult to define them. I'm telling you that because in your opening, Mrs. Nodjel said, I'm going to present a high powered. Then I said, oh my God. Really, it's the nature of your, and now I'm reminded, please, when you come back, explain this thing of financial year vis-a-vis what it does. If I can understand that, it will make me to understand more. But I come to terms, I don't know with other but they're a very complicated entity, maybe because you are managing or you are overseeing it's a huge bill that's not easy, but can honorable members, let's take just 10 minutes break for tea, and then we will come back. Thank you.